Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about how nerves work. If you grab a pebble between your thumb and index finger and squeeze it, and you put a monitor on the nerves which are supplying your muscles to your fingers, you'll hear it go tick, 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 and as you press even harder, it will tick even harder. It'll tick, speed up ticking, and as you release it, the ticks will go tick, 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 as your brain sends nerve impulses to your muscles. And I want to talk this time about what those ticks are, the actual voltages going through your nerves. And there's, I suppose, a lot of misconceptions that electricity actually flows along nerves, and for sure I've never seen a really good diagram of what's going on. And I think this is because people understand sort of very crude chemistry of ions, but they don't know about proteins, which have positive and negative aspects to them and can change the polarization. You can actually get a protein to change its effective charge by its environment. And so you can set this type of thing up. Now, you may hear that I'm breathing a little bit. I'm doing this podcast cold late at night. During the day, I've just been too busy. I have to do a bit of a cardiac rehab. So I'm doing it at two levels. One is the actual breathing and fitness and weight and stuff like that, and posture. And the other is the cognitive stuff. So the actual heart condition can actually break off, cause, you know, there's little clots break off, really hurts your brain, and the operation stuff puts you out for several whiles. And depending where it sort of affects people differently at different stages, and I've had to really struggle away to get back into the salad of just speaking and coherently putting thoughts together. At the same time, I can think and I can't speak. Think and speak at the same time. So we're going to take a tour of a nerve cell. So this is a particular cell which, when excited, decides after a certain input, will decide, yes, I'm going to fire. And it will set off a chain reaction, which then sends a nerve pulse down a fibre. So you can get quite long ones going from your spine, you know, down to your spinal cord and out down your legs to your feet. They're quite long nerve fibres. When I say neurons, a neuron is the actual nerve cell, and a bundle of neurons in a sheath, a protective sheath, form a nerve. So a nerve will have many wires or neurons going in. So neurons are little wires. So there can be some carrying sensors up to your brain, and some other wires or neurons will go all the way down through a nerve. So the idea is that a nerve is in a bundle, and these bundles are like pretty good wiring. You can see them. of course, if you can cut them, but they do wire through. And if you should look at a skull or any bone, occasionally you can see tiny little holes in those skulls where the actual nerve, rather than go around the outside of a bone, will actually go through a bone. And so you can see these, especially around the jaw bones, that there's these little holes with the nerve goes through with a bundle of axons inside of them. Now one of the things is that you can have for an overview looking at the different explanations in the internet and textbooks. These guys really don't have a full handle on chemistry, quantum chemistry, and the actual structure of molecules. So there's bits of the explanation which go, "What? Oh, I don't understand." The bits that they get right, but there's other major bits where they just sort of muck it up. It's pretty amazingly mucked up. So let's try and get into it. So we've got the general idea of proteins. So proteins are polymers of amino acids. An amino acid is a amine group, a nitrogen with two hydrogens, then a carbon with a side chain, then a carbon with a oxygen and an OH group. The OH group goes up to the ammonia amine group and peels off a water, and by casting off water you can actually make these long chain molecules, which are proteins. So proteins start off as a long linear molecule of nitrogen, carbon, carbon with an oxygen, nitrogen, and so forth. And the nitrogen, that first carbon, has a side chain off it, and that side chain can have all these properties. There can be phenyl groups on it. These are aromatic chains, or there can be acids which attract water, or things which remove water, or they can be positively charged or negatively charged. All these amino acids can be in different groups to do various things. So you can get your amino acid is basically a designer chemical. You can design with the basic properties a molecule which folds up. And when you fold up a specific molecule which does a job, a machinery piece of molecule which just floats around, that's called an enzyme, and it ends with the word A's. And the first one we're going to look at is carbolase. This is stretching my brain at the moment. I can't quite remember the full name of it, but it's a molecule which is put in your blood, so in your plasma. So you've got cells, red blood cells in your blood, and then you've got a whole lot of other blood. Is just not what liquid and saline, it's actually full of these protein groups, and one, the globulins. Globulin just means spherical cluster of proteins, so your proteins aren't out wandering around like a little string. They've actually bundled up into a little circle. And carbolase has the beautiful effect, it's the most simple of them all, I think, and it just absorbs carbon dioxide and chuffs it off in carbolic acid. And that is, it actually gets carbon dioxide and sticks a water to it, and which means, in effect, an OH. So it's H2CO3. So it's CO2 plus a H2O, H2CO3. The oxygen's there. And what that means is that this carbolase means that the blood is particularly good at absorbing carbon dioxide and turning it into an acid. So around you, like at the moment, I've got my little legs pumping back and forth. A bit of a sore back as I'm walking through here. Walking through the night at Glenbrook with a, I won't say what's on my head, because my kids get too upset that I wear a blanket to keep the heat in. Okay, so your carbolase is in your blood, and it means that your carbon dioxide, which is produced by every little cell is just breathing your blood, uses your blood to breathe from, and because you basically are an aquatic animal with the really nutritious
oxygenated and carbon dioxide dissolving liquid, your blood, you've got your own internal sea. Now this carbon dioxide makes your blood acidic, and your blood's acidic, it tends to, when there's a low carbon dioxide concentration, the carbon dioxide bubbles out. So when the blood gets pumped around your body, it picks up the carbon dioxide, transports it to your lungs, and it's exposed to a low carbon dioxide layer. Now remember that carbon dioxide is 0.1% of the, well, less than 0.1% of parts of the atmosphere, so it's very low concentration anyway. So when it's exposed to your lungs, the carbon dioxide just goes out. So that's one of them. So we're just getting the idea into your head that it's the molecules, the proteins, the molecular physics, which really drives a lot of our lives' reactions. Now, I'm not going to tell you the way that these textbooks and YouTube videos describe it, because you'll say, that's right, and then you won't listen to what I have to say at the moment. So carbolase, but then you've got the heme molecule, which is basically some sort of tennis racket with a gap in it for the iron in it. It's sort of like a jewel with an iron molecule, iron, so I-R-O-N, stuck in the centre of it. And this heme molecule holds it, but the heme molecule is like a jewel setting, and it sits in this complicated protein. And the complicated protein has basically a finger which sticks up, and ligand coordinates, is the word, with the iron to make something of this fantastic super duper hemoglobin. I sort of really like it. It's a molecule. It's really complex. You can look at it for, I don't know, hours. It's a never-ending fascination to look at it and see how it works. But this particular hemoglobin has the factor that it can do some pretty amazing things to oxygen molecules. So oxygen, if you like, is an O2 dumbbell, and this actually absorbs, but not strongly, oxygen. So and it does it for low acidity. If you increase the acidity of oxygenated blood, it suddenly releases the oxygen. So if you're smart, you can probably pick up the story, which took a while to pick up, work how it operates. So the hemoglobin goes to where there's a lot of carbon dioxide. The carbon dioxide is turned into acid, so the acidity goes up and the oxygen gets dumped off. So what the blood does is that if there's an acid buildup, it starts dumping the oxygen. And so essentially, if you've got some lonely little part of your body which is working away pretty hard, it will produce a lot of carbon dioxide. So say if you're going to flex your arm only, your left arm, you're going to do a lot of exercise on that, you decide that the fashion is to have a weak right arm and a big left arm, or a big southpaw, you're going to do lots of exercise. There's a lot of exercise, huh? Your left arm is going to need more oxygen, and it gets more oxygen because it's doing more work, producing more carbon dioxide. It's this beautiful thing. And so that's how the hemoglobin works. And it's really interesting to see how it organizes four on the heme molecules, four nitrogens and yet another nitrogen, which sets in the hemoglobin molecule. So globin means a enzyme. So hemoglobin is an enzyme. It's a molecule which does a chemical job, but its chemical job is quite specific. its chemical job is to absorb oxygen and release it when there's an acid build-up in the body. I hope that makes sense. It makes sense to me. Part of my overall understanding it. But so the hemoglobin is only active in a... or the heme molecule is only really active in the... it's only really active in the hemoglobin. And the hemoglobin molecule, to pack it up, to make it sufficiently dense and strong, it's actually put into a blood cell. So there's heaps of hemoglobin enzymes packed into, you know, I would have to think of how many there are in a red blood cell, which is, most cells are little circular ones. These ones are sort of a special disc-shaped ones. It's had the nucleus removed from it, so they can only, without the nucleus there, the red blood cell is made up, packed up, looked after itself. It eventually will die because it can't actually ever manufacture any of its own chemicals, because it's not producing fresh RNA for its ribosome. ribosome, I've actually forgotten the name of those little, it's ribosomes, endoplasmic reticulum ribosome, I really can't remember. Zome means any sort of enzyme is zome, so I think it would be ribosome. Yep, okay, so the red blood cell is there. It's really interesting. And of course, the heme molecule, when you get hit, the heme molecules shake off and they go through successive oxidations. Now, the entire thing is that these molecules aren't water soluble, so that's, then you've got to put them in a little package. So that's the other important thing about hemoglobin. It's not, the heme itself is not water soluble, so you've got to put it in a little waterproof package for it to operate. You just can't put it loose into your blood. So that's what's in the cell. But when it gets hit, it oxidizes and goes through a bilirubin. It turns green. So when you get hit initially in a bruise, your blood breaks apart and it goes browny or greeny when you get hit, and then later on your liver is continually going through checking out, basically it pretty much does a body search of every protein in your blood, and if it doesn't like it, it starts to rip it apart, and your blood gets ripped apart and goes through the green, and bilirubin is your blood when it's ripped apart sufficiently. It has sugars on it to make it sufficiently water attractant. So it's water repelling, your hemoglobin. So it's made water. It's made water dissolving. So it's then put in as a brown goop in your bile. So you can have green bile, which has got the bilirubin in it, or whatever it is, and as it goes through a further process, it goes to poo colour brown. So the brown in your poo is the blood being put out. But we're going to get there eventually on this, my friend. There's another thing in your blood, and I really want to point this one out, is the albumin, which is another globular molecule in your blood, forms out the by far the greatest fraction of your blood. And this is a function which is going to be relevant to nerves. It's one of these fantastic things, and it acts as an iron pump. So depending on its conditions, the molecule can, the albumin, which is a globular enzyme, when it's in your blood, it's Just you basically press a few buttons on it with a few chemicals around the outside of it, and it turns into a fairly decent negative charge, or the negative charge of the molecules exposed on the outside. And what it does is that it actually sucks out sodium ions. And by sucking out sodium ions, so it halves the sodium buildup in your body, and by harvesting it, it actually, water loves the sodium ion, so water follows it. And it creates this this albumin enzyme in your blood, which makes up a huge amount of your plasma. Albumin is named because it's a globular protein found in egg white. So your egg white, and so when your egg white, so it's got heaps of sulfur bonds in it, similar to egg white, and it's sort of like the syrupiness, the thickness of your blood. It's this album, it's egg white going through. You could have your blood low viscosity, but not too high viscosity. It's got to move very smoothly around places, and it's actually got to have some resistance going through the capillaries. So this albumin goes through there, and what it does is it mops up all the sodium ions. And what it does mean is that by mopping up the sodium ions, it also draws water out of your body. Now, that's your healthy state. If the albumin and your liver just stops working, or you have a heart condition which actually slows everything down, you begin to swell, and boy do I know that. So eventually, as your heart begins to fail, your liver stops cleaning the albumin, your albumin stops working as well, and you start to swell. Now this is the important thing, is that when it goes through the kidney, it's chemically treated. I don't know exactly how this operates, but the sodium ions are then put into your urine. So yes, wee out your sodium. This is why having lots of salt, I find this a bit hard to see how this actually falls through, but if you have lots of salt, your albumin has to do more work to remove that sodium, sodium from it. You need some sodium, but your body extracts that sodium. Now, what this means is that your blood pressure is actually higher than the liquid pressure on the outside of your body. So your blood pressure is high, but the actual tissues in it are lower pressure. So your heart, your blood pressure is higher than the actual pressure of the rest of your body. So your blood pressure isn't the full pressure of blood into your body. So if you can imagine that you have a human and you just hook it up to a hose, that pressure, if it was leaking, as it does leak, would eventually expand and the entire body would go up to that blood pressure. So it's really important. So it's a osmotic pressure, which drops the pressure across the capillary, and obviously means there's a gradient, another pressure gradient for nutrients and other things to go through past the capillary. So that's a sort of an interesting aspect. Now we come to cells. Neurons. So neurons are the cells which carry the signals inside the nerve. So a nerve can have many, many different neurons inside it, all bundled along, and that nerve carries along with a pulse. We're not going to go at the end of it. When it goes over the pulse, it releases sneeze agent or neurotransmitters for the next nerve. But we're going to look with inside that nerve. You can have several meters long. And I suppose the first misconception is that the nerve pulse is a movement of charge along the nerve, similar to a wire. The charge moves along the wire into the light bulb and therefore carries energy. The nerve doesn't actually carry energy, it only carries information. And a nerve pulse, really, is the way to imagine a nerve pulse is that you've set up all these dominoes and you just tick a domino. The one domino falls over, and when its head hits the correct waist of the next domino at an angle, so it's falling forward and it hits it sort of like the bottom third going up, it's sufficient to actually hit it over the next centre of gravity. So if it's too far in space, the domino will fall and actually knock the next domino forward and it will flip backwards. So you can get the spacing optimal. But these dominoes, when you knock it, so when you knock the dominoes, they all go forward. That's okay for getting a piece of information. You have it in a Rube Goldberg machine, you press the domino, it sends the information forward and sets off the next thing, which could be a muscle contraction at the end. Of course, that's only once, so what you want to do is have a mechanism of resetting those dominoes. So another nerve pulse is a nerve pulse, but to say more, you send more pulses down. So more pulses down. What you want is you want a whole lot of school children come in and set up the dominoes again, ready for the next nerve pulse to go down. That would take a bit. Or you could buy a packet of magic dominoes, and that is that would have little arms and legs and wrap themselves up and position themselves all by themselves. And that is exactly what happens in a nerve cell. It has basically a domino effect going through, and it all falls over, and then after a certain while it re-triggers itself. And what we say is that the nerve has a potential, acts as a sort of a little battery across it, with charge does not travel down it, and ions don't travel down it. The ions move in and out. So the nerve axon, which we're going to talk about, this is the little fiber which goes down, the neuronal fiber. You can imagine it a bit like a garden hose. And what happens is that has a potential across the garden hose. And that is, if I put a wire in the center and a wire on the surface, it's like a spherical, sort of a cylindrical battery. There's a voltage across the outside, and that's the cell potential. And it's like, it's a plus and minus charge associated with it. Now, this is where the explanations I've seen fall down, because they draw an unequal number of positive and negative charges. They tend to just draw positive charge. But a axion is of zero net charge because if it was charged, you'd be able to, your nerve fibers would be attracted, would feel that you feel there's no net charge. So there's an equal number of negative and positive charges. The positive charges come from two species, and they're critically important, from sodium and potassium. So it goes lithium, sodium, potassium, I forget what the next one up, all that francium in there. Little metal ions, so you've actually got metal in you, and the cell has got a potential field across it, but overall it's got no net charge. If it had a net charge, you'd be able to, I don't know, rub a party balloon and feel it pushing your nerves around. Doesn't happen, despite, so I think we've already knocked out over half the internet explanations of what's going on. So there's no net charge, and there's an electric voltage between the axis and the surface of the accent. And so there's something about this which can have a pulse go across it. So it actually physically travels across as an instantaneous pulse which runs past. So if you have a little voltmeter there with a wire in the center of the nerve fiber and a wire on the top of the nerve, the axon of the neuron. So nerve is a bundle of neurons. For the speaking neuron, you could actually you'd see your needle go. Well, it depends how you wire it up. I'm going to say the way that makes sort of sense, the way it's drawn, it'll be negative, roughly 30 millivolts all the time, and as it's coming along, it'll go up to plus 70 millivolts. So 70 millivolts, overall, it's got 0.1 of a volt difference going through your nerve cell, but it's a little pulse. It's a little traveling pulse of voltage will be across. So if you had a two-dimensional voltage probe, which could measure it in real time, you'd actually see, and you could slow it down, you could see this little tsunami of voltage going across, and the voltage is not caused by the orientation of your domino, if you want to say, and it's surprisingly like domino. It's not that from that, it's from the actual act of falling gives you that little pulse. You want to have that. So the act of falling gives you the little pulse. Again, that's kicked out, or the running half, that's kicked out all of them. Okay, look, I have yet to find a good explanation of this on the internet. So it's the actual voltage comes from the voltage spike, which you would measure. It comes from the actual domino falling over. Let's see how I'm going for time here. Can't read it. The point is, this is a smart dictaphone, so if I have to stop and catch my breath, it stops recording. So if I want to look at the time, I have to get under the street light while I'm recording to look at the time. I can't do this at night. Okay, so let's recap. We've got a neuron which is excited and it decides, my brain has told me to send a nerve pulse this much, and what happens is you can only say go, go. Like, it's like a bit like that little is it meerkat? I can't remember. What's that meerkat? It's some sort of ground squirrel. It goes, Alan, Alan, Alan. Yeah, that's all the cells do. They go, oh, oh, like that. Yeah, they're not all that smart. All they can go, ba, ba, ba. And so you can make it go slow, ba, or you can make it go, ba, 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 to a maximum rate. And when it goes like that, it's like a sound wave traveling through, and the voltage is only when the domino flips and then it quietly, stealthily resets itself without changing the voltage. This is such a... Oh, I can't believe some of the internet things I've seen for it. So how does it do it? Well, you're told at the up front there's some sodium and potassium, and there's these couple of things. There's a membrane, so it's like a plastic hose. The membrane is the surface of the hose with a little, it's a bit like a, those soaker hoses that got little holes in it, and those little holes can act as a pump or channel. So when there's a voltage pushing things across, i.e. there's a negative charge presented inside the cell, the channel will just open and it will want to go through. And if it doesn't want to go through, there's another mechanism where it can actually push it through. So this is a bit of a thing of going across. So what it is that there is some sort of negative, a dipole, that is, a separation of charges. And people, for some reason, are not quite sure. They never put what the minus charge. The minus charge is not an ion like a chlorine minus. It's actually a protein with a dipole moment. So a protein is, if you like, is neutral, but it's got a plus end and a minus end, and a protein can actually change how dipole it is in the presence of other ions. So you can actually just recreate a dipole. So let's try and explain it here, and you get a real picture of this if you've done molecular simulations, or if you've at least spoken to people who've done supercomputer calculations of molecules of proteins. You get a good feel for, you know, all that's going on here. This is super important for it. So we've got the membrane, we've got the membrane's like the house, and then you've got the characters, which is the sodium ion, which is small, the potassium ion is a bit more fluffy, it's a bit bigger. Further up the periodic table, they get bigger as they get up the periodic table. And then you've got these proteins which have a net negative charge, but the shape of that negative charge, how that charge is around, can be shaped. So these are sort of like super smart. The negative ones are the real manipulators. The sodium ions, yes, they move. The ions, they move in and out of the cell, but the ones which really control the action is the proteins. And we're going into uncharted territory here, and I warn you, if you know more, know more, but you're sort of entering into sort of my expert knowledge, and I'm trying to pass it across in good faith, and I'm not standing up here saying this is how it is. Trust me, I'm not trying to sell you a textbook or trying to do anything. I'm just trying to explain what's, you know, obvious must happen. So we'll go again, that the pulse goes down the axon, which is the wire coming out of a nerve fiber, and the pulse is not a movement of charge, it's just a local ripple in the voltage as seen across the interface between the center of the fiber and the outside of the fiber. And as this voltage flips, as it falls down, it sends a signal further down the fiber to release the next bit, which creates the next ripple. So if you, the best way is to think of it as like a domino falling, but you only measure the actual sound, not whether the domino's on its side or standing up. You don't measure that. That's both those cases. Is at minus 30 millivolts. It's only when it's falling does it actually trip up to 70 millivolts. That's actually wiped out every. I've looked about half a dozen YouTubes on it and explanations. So it's the 70. It's called the action potential. And it's called the action potential, that's because when the stuff actually goes into action. So you've got two things happening. One is that when the action potential arrives, it opens up channels, opens the fiber up, and then the ions move a short distance. That actually doesn't create the voltage. Then you get the dipole created or flipped when the appropriate ions rush in. And then when they're rushed in, they overrush, you get a rush in, a back rush, and then everything settles up again. And then over the next resting period, it re-triggers the dipoles. And so a dipole is a stick with a plus end and a minus end. And how strong that dipole is can be in a molecule, in a protein, can be determined by a whole systems of systematic of its environment. So these little dipoles don't like sodium in them, and so the cell laboriously in the rest period to set the trap, pumps out the sodium to the outside of the cell of the axion sheath, and as it pumps, it pushes one sodium out, it lets another potassium in. So there's a two-way flow. So there's no net charge moving across the barrier. The sodium comes out, the potassium comes in, and it grows the dipole. These molecules, which have a negative end and a positive end, makes the dipole more extreme, and it means that the negative ends start to point towards the outer side, because there's a positive charge on the outside. Its negative end starts to the outside, and that means that you can get slightly more potassiums on the outside. So sodiums get actually pushed outside the cell, and they still want to be attracted to the negative end of the proteins, which are sticking out there. There's heaps of different proteins. So it means that the negative ends of the proteins line the outside of the inside of the cell, and there's an accumulation of positive charges. So you get a plus minus plus dipole produced, as the potassiums on the inside aren't as effective at reorienting those dipoles. So it really is, the dipoles really do flip. It really does fall like a domino. And there's two aspects for the orientation, but also the charge within your the charge distribution within your protein changes. And so the real current that you see when the pulse comes apart, and these are in the fraction of hundreds of thousands of a second, is the charges moving within the proteins. There, the negative charges move within the proteins, and the ions move a small distance across these ion channels. So when it does that, the proteins are suddenly change configuration, and this sudden change of configurations launches a voltage spike, which then triggers the opening of channels which allow ions to move out. So the ions then move across the barrier, and so you've got these two things happening: the ions, the channels opening, and the dipole momentarily flips, creating a charge. Then the cell has to rest for a while as it laboriously moves the sodium back outside the cell, ready for the next pulse to go. It's the flipping of the domino going down. So that's actually how the nerve action potential runs down your axion. It's actually a series of channels opening on the walls, and the channels are opened on the walls set up by the voltage spike. When they do open up, they do create the voltage spike a little bit further up, because the voltage spike, or the field spike, is caused by a sudden change in the dipole moment or dipole interaction due to the fields. The ions are moving away, the charge has been exposed, and then as they move around, they reset the dipole, the dipole there. And so you only really see this when you see the importance of protein. So let's just recap on, the dumb chemistry view, where you just only look at oxygen, you only look at carbon dioxide, and you only look at sodium ions. You don't get much of a story. People learn how it works. You know how they learn how it works? They copy down notes from the board. They're told, they read from a textbook. And those people who can remember and respond get full marks for saying, oxygen is absorbed in the blood. And then it goes here. They don't explain it, but they live in this entire universe where you don't actually see the effect of these proteins, which can actually do these fantastic things. They can promote the absorption or the conversion of carbon dioxide to acid, or they can absorb oxygen depending on the acidic component. So if there's no acid there, if there's acid there, it says, oh hell mate, you need some oxygen, and so it just pumps out the oxygen. Or in this case, it's a protein which has a dipole moment dependent on whether there's potassium and sodium around it, and so with that it organizes a sort of, basically it sets itself up as a protein domino. So the proteins are the dominoes, the actual iron flow is the actual sort of like the force of gravity on it, and so it falls over, and it falls over when the sodiums jump on and flip it, and then the cell works away to reset up a thing. And look, here's a beautiful, is it a lizard? No, it's not. It's actually just a stick. I'd be surprised that when you walk at summertime, there's a fair number of lizards just absorbing the heat on rocks and various things like that. So that's my story. I've done my cardiac walk, and the overall idea is that I pump out these podcasts, improve my cardiac rehab, and get a general build up. So the lesson preparation, the website, the apps, the podcast, try to get the podcast across Twitter. What's that? There's another one out there. Twitter, YouTube now. There's another social media one, which is feed burners and stuff like that. And then I just pull my teeth out at the moment. There seems the only way to automate it onto Facebook is to pay WordPress $10 a month, which would just absolutely kill me. So I can get it out on Facebook and LinkedIn. So I get them all up and running, and so I'll hopefully be physically and mentally rehabbed with a full suite of technology to go ahead. And of course, the icing on the cake is that I've got a sufficient amount of time to actually look through these things and say, oh well, hang on, this is the actual core material. So I've got the icing, but the actual core ingredients of what I'm teaching is not there, or at least I will know that there's actually no genuine knowledge in just getting people to rote learn what's going on. And I suppose the basic thing is that you have to know that a nerve sends a pulse down, and I suppose there's no way that you can actually get sufficient time to actually get people to understand what proteins do. And you can really only understand what proteins do by knowing the molecular orbitals and the actual shape of orbitals and how electrons charge and all the properties of the protein come about due to the actual nature of the amino acids on it. So that's all for the night. I'll actually put this in and just put it on my the podcast engine. I think everything is cleared with it. There's a few more tweaks that you want to reduce the number of keystrokes to do, but I think the major advance has been at least today, well, picking up a few bugs with it, and souping up the codecs for the video and audio encoding, so it doesn't take an hour to download the files. A little bit shorter, a little bit more optimized for YouTube upload, and then the processing's a doddle at YouTube's end, because I've actually just gone through Redwood Codecs YouTube users, and that doesn't have to figure out what thing that you're sending it to, and then apply a process engine to it. Yeah, there's probably a few more things I'll get done. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.